Well, hello, my Rising Above leaders. This is John O'Leary, and boy, am I excited to have you on this call. And we're excited this month to be talking about fear. And fear is a powerful motivator. What we know, though, is love is even more powerful. And on this call with me is someone that I look up to, someone who I have read, someone whose research absolutely blows me away. His name is Dr. Mark Schoen. He's a PhD. He's an assistant clinical professor at the UCLA Geffen School of Medicine, and he does much, much, much more than that. Dr. Schoen, welcome to the call with us.
Yes, very nice to be here. Thank you.
Dr. Schoen, we have at Rising Above several stories, like narrative, that speak to how fear can be so destructive and love can allow us to rise above it, to move through it. What I liked so much about your powerful book, Your Survival Instinct is Killing You, is you kind of frame this up. You talk clinically about what's going on with fear, how destructive it is, and then give us some practical tools to use. So before we even really spend a whole lot of time going through the book and the process, just realize that I really appreciated the amount of effort you put into this and how clearly you spelled it out for us.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate that.
You know, when you spend time writing a 252-page book, I have a feeling you've got a pretty big heart for the topic. So tell me, where does your passion for this topic come from?
You know, I've been practicing for 34 years, and I realized when I was actually about to write another book, which I changed my mind to write this book, is that I realized that all these years, what I was really dealing with, no matter what people came in with, whatever symptom, it had to do with, at its very core, fear. And even though I was thinking about it in other ways, in terms of safety or in just terms of getting stuck in bad habits, what the core, the essential ingredient, was people being paralyzed by fear. And once that, I mean, it seems so obvious now, but at the time it wasn't. But once that became clear to me, I wanted to write a book on fear and what ultimately made us more vulnerable to fear. And then, of course, what we can do about it to change it.
Yes. So let's kind of guide through the process. One of the notes that I highlighted in your book, I just think this is so beautiful. So, indeed, the majority of discomfort is typically self-manufactured. Where do you think fear comes from, Dr. Schoen?
Well, you know, as an early species, when we were trying to survive in the wild, fear was something that was wired into us because it served a survival purpose. We had to be able to react to things that could instantaneously harm us, someone trying to kill us or an animal pursuing us. And so that had survival value. And so those humans that had the ability to react decisively to fear were the ones that survived and therefore the ones that were able to propagate and then have children, and we become the product of that. Obviously, those humans that didn't have that kind of wiring didn't live long enough to create the children and so on. But
mm-hmm.
now here we are in this century where that kind of fear, that kind of real physical fear is thankfully not a big part of our lives. But yet, that instinct, that hard wiring is still there. And so now, where fear at one time had survival value, now, in the present day, fear is actually much more destructive and anything but having survival value.
When some of us think of fear, we think of just a little bit of anxiety, and maybe it doesn't sound all that destructive, maybe awkward and uncomfortable, but you're using words like destructive and really critical. It's a critical issue. Tell us biologically, what are some of the things going on when we're dealing with fear?
Yes, I mean, you're right. You know, when we talk about anxiety or stress, you know, we think of it maybe differently than we would about fear, but in actuality, they are an extension of the fear response. So they are, you know, at the very base of them, it's fear. So what happens is that we truly have a center in the brain, an actual part of the brain that's set aside for the fear response. It's called the amygdala, and it's in one of our oldest parts of our brain called the limbic system. And this amygdala, when it senses fear, it triggers this biochemical response in the body that virtually instantaneously turns on what we all know is the fight or flight response. And that's the part that, you know, ignites the blood pressure, the heartbeat, the respiration, releases cortisol, other sort of adrenal responses. And that's all because of this amygdala and then hypothalamus, part of this older part of the brain. So it obviously has served a purpose in the past. But now we are essentially stuck in this sort of fight or flight mode almost 24 hours a day sometimes. And that's where the problem is. The problem isn't just getting afraid or becoming fearful. The problem is chronic states of fear, and that's what degrades the body.
Do you think, chapter two, I think we'll spell out your answer for the folks who have been reading along, and for those folks who haven't yet, I encourage them to dive into it. But you talk about the cozy paradox. Kind of give us a snapshot of what we in first world countries have going on today and how that affects our overall well-being.
Yeah, it is a paradox because here we are in a time where we've had all these technological advances that basically increase the comfort in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
Cell phones, computers, and all sorts of other technology. But at the same time, we have grown increasingly intolerant of being uncomfortable. And that's important because if we've become less tolerant of being uncomfortable, what that essentially means is that we're feeling uncomfortable much more often than we ever used to. And that is really critical because as we feel uncomfortable, this old part of our brain that where the fear response is situated, it experiences discomfort as a threat. And if it feels threatened by discomfort and we're feeling uncomfortable more often, that means this part's feeling threatened more often. And that means the fear response is being triggered so much more than it needs to be.
So you see this, I'm assuming, show up when the thermostat goes way up to 73 or 74 instead of 72, or the line for TSA is 6 minutes long instead of three. That we're just not used to being even a little bit uncomfortable anymore.
That's right. I really feel that we've become less tolerant than we used to be, or we could use a different word. We're just not quite as resilient as we used to be. And so you're right. You know, if we have to stand in line a little bit longer than we'd like to, or if we have to wait longer to get seated and be able to order our meal, or we're waiting on someone to show up, or we're hungry, all these things create discomfort. And we now, because we've become so much more accustomed to being comfortable, we've come to feel that when we're uncomfortable, that it's something bad, that it's something we're supposed to avoid. And therefore, if we feel like, oh my God, I'm uncomfortable and I need to do something about it, we become, therefore, more revved up, more spiked up with what shows up as anxiety or a stress response, and then even more important, physical symptoms, which have a big impact on our long-term health.
Well, I think you're leaning toward the birth of the bad habits. And in Chapter 5, you talk about obsessions and compulsions and addictions. Tell me, you know, in short terms, where these things are being born from and what their effect on us is.
Where the habits are.
Where are these obsessions and these compulsions and these addictions? What's leading to them? Huh. And then what's the negative consequence in our lives?
Well, here's what happens. When we are in chronic states of fear and being uncomfortable, dopamine levels, and dopamine is this neurotransmitter in the brain that's associated with a mood, positive mood. And we have several transmitters that affect mood. Another one is serotonin. But the difference of dopamine is that it's the part that makes us feel excited and are happy. You know, the prospect of meeting someone new or having a great time with friends or feeling in love or chocolate or a great dessert or, you know, winning a lot of money, this is related to a dopamine surge in the brain. So it's a very positive, energetic feeling. But now what happens with chronic states of fear, dopamine is suppressed. In other words, it goes lower. And that has two effects. One, as it goes lower, it increases our level of being uncomfortable. And then secondly, makes us instinctively driven to try to raise the dopamine levels. And so we then rely or can become inveigled in addictions such as alcohol or food or certain types of obsessions. And
yes.
So we try to replenish the dopamine, but as we engage more and more in these kinds of addictions and habits, it only raises dopamine levels in a fleeting way, and then ultimately leads to an even lower baseline of dopamine. So we get in this cycle that becomes very difficult to break.
So we've talked a bit about some of the challenges with living with a pervasive level of fear guiding our lives. Let's pivot now and talk about some of the solutions. What can we do about this?
The first part of it is to retrain ourselves to be able to be more comfortable with being uncomfortable. In other words, the goal is not to banish discomfort. That's not the goal. The goal, because it's unlikely that discomfort is not going to be part of our lives. And even though we strive for some sort of uniformity and everything being good and positive and Shangri-La and Nirvana, the fact is that when things line up perfectly, it's not long-standing. It tends to be more ephemeral. So we're typically living in a world where things aren't lining up. So our
yes.
ability to live with some sort of discomfort is essential. So that's
yes.
a critical part. And then secondly, what we need to do is to manage those parts of our lives that raise our discomfort levels. In other words, going back to what I was saying, that if our discomfort level reaches a certain threshold and exceeds that threshold, then the fear response goes off. But if we can keep our discomfort below this sort of high bar threshold, then we can keep the fear response from being triggered as often. So if we can take out parts of our lives that are overly spiking our discomfort level, then that's great. For example, you know, one of the things that does it is our over-reliance on technology. You know, we get stuck in needing instant feedback, you know, instant gratification these days. Or we've become a culture that's, because of the dependency on computers and technology, we've become a culture that has become much more perfectionistic. And these types of things ignite our discomfort levels. These are things that we can control. So if we can slow down some of our reliance on technology, I'm not saying give it up, but what people are doing is they're staying on their computers or cell phones just before bedtime. Or they're expecting perfection from people. And because, you know, we have to live in a perfectionistic world when we're using our technology, it's easy to sort of take that and throw it onto reality and expect that from our partners or from the world. And when we expect perfection, then we're going to be disappointed. That raises discomfort levels. And, of course, the instant gratification, that thing I was saying, you know, look how much we need that feedback right away. We expect a text message back instantaneously. We expect
yes.
to be fed, you know, when we're hungry. These things raise our discomfort level. These are things we can control and influence.
You're encouraging the folks you coach, consult, and teach, and then people lucky enough to read your book, to stretch these muscles that maybe they haven't stretched since they were kids.
you know, we're not trained to, are we? We're not given this type of training. And then there are so many other things we could do. So that what I was talking about there are the things that, you know, we can do to lower some of these discomfort factors in our lives. But there are other things we can do to retrain the brain. And this brings us into some very fun things, because what we want to do is make it so that the fear response in us takes up essentially less space.
Yes.
Right now it's taking up a ton of space. I think of it as like a train, you know, going to the fear center, and it's only one stop, one way.
That's right.
And so what happens is, so we think about public speaking, or we think about conflict, or whatever it might be, it automatically can lead to a fear response. But what we can do is train the brain so that the fear response is smaller. And the way we do that is essentially build up other parts of the brain that have nothing to do with fear. And one of them is something that we talked about earlier, is we can build up the part of the brain that has to do with empathy or love. It literally competes, and it interferes with the fear response. Now, I'm sure as your readers and followers, you know that, you know, the fear response is a small, shrunken, compact, condensed response in the body. It's a tightened down. And so it really, essentially, is small. But love and empathy and caring and appreciation is a much bigger response in the body. It brings in many other parts of the body and the brain. So what it is, it's really a larger response. And, of course, our spirituality, as we tune into that part, we can also create a bigger, larger, more expansive response, which shrinks the fear response. But note, we're not trying to extinguish the fear response, because we need it. But we
Yes.
want to relegate it to the places and times in our life when it's needed.
Dr. Shone, it's beautiful to hear a teaching professor, PhD, and a super bright gentleman talk about faith and love and compassion as ways to combat the corrosiveness of fear. And I got to just remind the folks on this call, and if they have not yet read the book, your book, Your Survival Instinct is Killing You, by Dr. Mark Shone, is outstanding. It should be on everyone's bookshelf. It's on mine. I've read through it. I'm going to be reading through it a second time, and it's going to be mandatory reading for my family. So I'm so grateful for the time on this call with you. I look forward to the next one as well.
Thank you very much for taking an interest in this. I really appreciate it. And, you know, if your readers and followers want to learn more, please feel free to go to my website, which is my name, markshone.com, and there is a breathing technique on there that is a free download, you know, for people if they want to download it, and they can find that on my website.
And we'll direct link into it, but in case you are driving right now, I'm going to give you this so you guys can check out it later on. It's MarkShone, markshone.com. You're going to read about a great person, great ideas, and it's going to be transformative in your life. Dr. Shone, I'd like you to get the last word. When they finish this book, they put down their pen, and get back into life. What's the one thing you hope they walk away with?
What I'm hoping, and certainly my mission, is to make a difference and to understand fear from a larger perspective, not just something that, you know, it's something to avoid and it's uncomfortable, but that fear literally impacts the nature of our lives, from relationships to health to longevity to following our passion to being able to pursue goals. And if we can learn to manage fear better, our ability to be in this world in a much more productive, fulfilling, and happy way becomes possible. Prejudice and impatience and intolerance really will take up a much smaller space in our lives. And so to me, that is the mission, because if we can change fear, we can change a big part of this world. That's my core feeling about this.
And since you brought it up, I got to ask you one more final question. A lot of folks sense, or at least they say, that this is just who I am. I'm just a fear-riddled man, fear-riddled woman. It's how my mother was and my grandmother and the grandmother before her. For the folks who feel like this is just their calling in life, to be guided forward by fear, what is your response when you come across patients and friends and colleagues like that say that?
You know, it is a common thing for people to say this just the way it is. And I'd like them to examine that if they take that attitude, how much is that a way to sort of avoid taking certain responsibilities? In other words, is it an excuse to just not go forward, to not reach for something more, to basically just cop out? But I'd like those people to consider that there is a lot that can be done here, that we don't have to accept these types of shortcomings. And it's true, some of us are wired more for fear. That's absolutely right. But there is data, research, and my work as well to show that this can be modified and doesn't take heavy lifting. In fact, I even have a study that was published last year. Literally, people just listening to a CD at bedtime, and it dramatically shifted the fear response and built up resilience. And it was simple as can be, just listening to something at night. So,
what, do you mind us asking what the CD was?
Ah, yes. The CD that they listen to is a thing called The Stress Answer. And this CD that people listen to at night, and some listen to it in the morning, and we drew blood to see what was the biochemical effect of it. And the effect of it was that, boom, it created resilience and then knocked down a biochemical response associated with fear called inflammation.
Well, my friend, I wish we had twice as long, and I wish we were sitting across from each other with a cup of coffee. I really appreciate your work. We're going to have you back on. The topic of fear and the alternative of faith and love is just too important not to discuss and lift up high. So thank you for your work, your research, and my friends listening at home, next month we're going to be moving from fear and love into accountability when we get to own our next step forward. And helping us do that will be the authors of the Oz Principles. So you won't want to miss next month. And until then, thanks for who you are, all you do, and know this, the best is yet to come. Continue boldly.
Thank you again.